Governor, in the book, you share a lot about this long and difficult journey that you had in your decision to halt the executions in Illinois. You were a supporter at one point in your life of the death penalty when it was put back in place in Illinois in 1977. So looking back on your decision to institute a moratorium, what do you see as the tipping point? What was the main factor in your mind that convinced you that Illinois just had to do this?
Well, first of all, I was a proponent of the death penalty, as you said, all my life. And then when we reinstated the death penalty, I think in 77, I was a member of the General Assembly then and had been for, I think, 4 or 5 years. And we had a vote on the House floor where I was serving at the time, and it was to reinstate the death penalty. And I was voting green for it. I thought it was a good proposal. It was important for the Justice Department to have something to work with to deter crime in some fashion. And so I voted yes, and I believed in it. And a fellow by the name of Bob Mann, who was a liberal Democrat out of Chicago that was opposed to the death penalty. And he got up and he said, for those of you that are voting green here today, who of you would be willing to throw the switch if they had to execute somebody? And it gave me a little reason to kind of pause and think about it for a minute. And I said to myself, you know, I'm for the death penalty, but I sure wouldn't want to throw the switch. And little did I know that that pressure came to haunt me then some 20 years later when I was governor and had to make a decision about whether I was going to kill somebody or not. And but it wasn't until 20 years later that I had to really deal with it and face it, because I never really had to at any time, nor was I ever really questioned about it during a campaign, and many campaigns. Nobody would ask me outside of the people, the organizations that were interested in the issue one way or the other. And I just decided that I had to make a decision on it. So that's why I got involved in it. And then we saw the Anthony Porter case. Mm-hmm. I was in the mansion watching the WGN news and one night with my wife, and I was in Springfield. And this little guy comes running out of prison with a big smile on his face and runs over and hugs a guy by the name of Protest, who was the journalism instructor at Northwestern University. And he says that they were happy that they could get Anthony Porter released from prison and released. And it was the journalism students at Northwestern University, I'm sure you know the story, that really went out and found, they hired a prosecutor, an inspector, an investigator, and found the guy, I think his name was L. Story Simon. He was up in Wisconsin someplace. They got a taped confession that he did the murder that Anthony Porter was about to be murdered or killed for. And so that's, I said to my wife, how does that happen in America? Mm. How does some guy get put on death row for 15, 16 years in this country, every day have to worry about when they're going to pull the switch to kill him, every morning for 16 years? What kind of a life is that? And then find out that he's innocent, and kind of refused to compensate him for his time. I don't think they only paid him about $150,000 for 15 years of misery in his life. But at least they didn't kill him. I was thankful for that. So that's really what really grabbed my attention on that issue. And I started to move forward on it.
Maurice, today I think the public has a good concept of what it means when we talk about wrongful convictions. They understand that new evidence came forward to prove someone's innocence. But 1977, that wasn't necessarily the case. And at that time, it was journalists, including reporters like yourself at the Chicago Tribune and journalism students, who actually were the ones who were working on this and uncovering the early injustices in Illinois. So, I mean, what does that say about our system? That it was journalists and journalism students who were the ones who really took this on as a priority to look into these early conviction wrongful conviction cases.
Well, that was kind of a what I now refer to as a little bit of a golden era in journalism, when editors really gave a lot of reporters, and particularly at the Chicago Tribune, a lot of freedom to look into these cases. As anyone who has done wrongful conviction work knows, these can take a long time to pull apart and try to put them back together in the proper order so that you can see what really did happen. And the things that you need are some resources, really, and space to tell your story and time to do it. And the Tribune was generous with that. And, you know, when DNA emerged as a really significant truth teller in the justice system, we began seeing sort of the awakening of the public consciousness. And I think that for the governor, seeing these people walk off death row to the point where we had more people exonerated than there were executed was a real awakening. And also it was this emerging body of knowledge that the media really contributed to, because, you know, when you think about where do you get your information, what are the sources of your information, and when the Tribune was doing studies of the criminal justice system in addition to wrongful conviction cases, they were looking at, say, all murder convictions during a certain period of time and not cherry picking anecdotes. And so the power of the data was much more evident when Steve Mills and Ken Armstrong did a series that looked at all 285 death cases in Illinois and really revealed a system in tatters. I think those kinds of reports, and there were a bunch of them in 1999, which was leading up to when the governor declared the moratorium. And, you know, when he and I worked together on this memoir, it became clear to me how often he wound up saying exactly what he was just saying, and that is, how does this happen? How does this happen in America? Mm-hmm. So I do think that journalists at writ large played a significant role in exposing the flaws of the criminal justice system. And then it became up to those who were in positions of the power to do something about it. We can only sort of shine the light on things. Right. And then, you know, we can show that a conviction was bad, but we can't go into court and get DNA testing.
Right,
it has to
right.
be the people who are the movers, the lawyers, the shakers, and the judges, and people like Governor Ryan, who said, okay, the system is so riddled with error that I can't sit, I'm taking my finger off the switch.
Governor, in the book, you recall the big concerns that you had. You called it Illinois' shameful record of convicting innocent people and putting them on death row. When it comes to the death penalty, you can't afford mistakes, you said. Why do you think it was so challenging for you to convince others in Springfield that the system was so riddled with these obvious flaws?
Well, I didn't really have a problem with the when we asked for the moratorium, we didn't have too many objections. As I recall, people that voted against it in the House, at least, and I'm sure that was true in the Senate, it passed pretty easy because people didn't want to be accused of being for executing an innocent person, if that would be the case. And they decided that maybe we should look at it. But it for the most part, the problem came was when we tried to do away with it, make some changes in the system, because nobody wanted to look, and they never do if they're running for public office, but to look like they're soft on crime. They can do the things that that they just don't want to get caught on voting in the wrong way. So that was kind of the big problem I had there.
Maurice, why do you think it's important to continue this discussion now about the death penalty in this country? I mean, I know we're starting after 17 years federal executions again now under the Trump administration, and those are still ongoing even literally today. Why do you think it's important to keep talking about this and having this conversation about capital punishment in the U.S.?
Well, we still have it in a lot of states, although I will say this, that there's a fair number of states that I call de facto abolition states because they haven't had an execution in 10 years. But as you mentioned, the federal government has decided, our president decided, okay, we're going to start killing people that are on death row in the federal system. I think that George's story is as relevant today as it was then, because it really delivers this message about what is wrong with the system and how can the system be trusted, and can you ever make a perfect system? There's a line from a philosopher that says, out of the crooked timber of life, no human ever made a perfect thing. And I'm paraphrasing there, but that's generally the idea. And I do think that, you know, I said to somebody the other day that this book should be required reading for every legislator, whoever comes across this issue, every governor who has in a death penalty state who has to deal with it. I do think that our country one day will abolish the death penalty. When that will happen, you know, if you had asked me 10 years ago, will Illinois ever abolish the death penalty? And I said, would have said, I don't know if it would be in my lifetime. And then sure enough, in 2011, there it went. So these things happen. I do think that when Governor Ryan imposed the moratorium, it was so momentous because no governor had ever done such a thing like that. And it drew attention to the issue of innocence, which had not been a compelling argument for a lot of people up to that point in time. The main debate over the death penalty was, is it morally right for the state to kill people to deter others from killing people? And the innocence debate that was really fueled by what the governor did propelled the abolition movement. Now, I think in more recent times, the financial argument has come to bear as well in a powerful way. And I think that it has provided, at least for some states, some political cover to abolish the death penalty, saying it's just too expensive a system, and it is an expensive system. But I think that beyond all that, the relevance is that the death penalty system is the same criminal justice system that we all are exposed to or is in place for all of us. It's just that the stakes are higher. The potential punishment is we're going to kill you. It applies to people who have life without parole. It applies to people who have sentences with parole. It's many of the flaws that we see in the death penalty system are flaws that are not just unique to that. And that's why this is relevant beyond the death penalty.
I'm Edith Brady Lunny. I'm talking today with former Illinois Governor George Ryan and Pulitzer Prize winning journalist Maurice Posley. They've written a new book titled Until I Could Be Sure, How I Stopped the Death Penalty in Illinois. Governor Ryan, you write about the very personal nature that your deliberations took on the death penalty. One of the sentences of death row inmates that you commuted in 2003 was that of Danny Edwards, who had killed your neighbor and friend, Steve Small, in 1987. And there were other horrific cases where guilt was certain. That struggle to recognize the suffering of victims is something that you write about. Can you talk a little bit about what that was like, what you went through during that portion of your deliberations on this?
Well, it was not very pleasant, frankly. I didn't have anybody on my staff that was that stood with me. Everybody there was, I had to work against pretty much. Matt Bettenhausen was my guy for death penalty for problems, and he stood with me. But from my chief of staff to right down to everybody in the staff, they admonished me for doing what I was doing. But it was difficult, you know, and I met with both parties, the exonerate, the people that had been sent to jail, and the people that had their loved ones killed. And the victims' families were the toughest to deal with, and I understood that. They all said that they wanted closure, and they wanted to see the fellow, the person that killed their daughter or their son or somebody, they wanted to see him executed to get closure. And so it was a very difficult time for me during that period to keep moving along with it. But I did, and I still believe that it was the right thing to do, and I'd do it again, I suppose. Mm-hmm.
Do you think enough changes have been made with the system, enough reforms have been made across the country that people should have confidence in any state that the death penalty is being used with full accuracy?
Well, Marsh just pointed out, you know, most states haven't had an execution in 10 years. So that's another thing that's probably false. They're going to have it. They do it. They're not fooling around, I suppose, if they're trying to send a message. But, it was just one of those things that it seemed to be the right thing to do to me. If you got a system, and I appointed, you know, a commission, mm-hmm. That provided some 85 changes to the laws to make sure we didn't kill an innocent person. And of course, it was an election year, and the only thing that passed the General Assembly after all the work that commission put in was the tape recording of confessions, and it was an important part of the reform package. But that's the only thing the General Assembly would pass. And that's why I then had to commute the sentences of everybody, because I didn't want to leave office in the few days that I had left there, and be at home watching the news to find out that some poor innocent guy that I ignored was executed, and he was an innocent man or woman. And so I always kind of likened it to flying an airplane from Boston to Chicago or however you want to go. And it crashed three times a week. Now, would you put the plane on the ground and try to fix it? Or would you continue to fly it for letting it crash three times a week? And that's what I said about the death penalty. You know, we've had enough of this, and we're crashing too many times. So we got to close down the system and find out what's wrong with it and get it fixed and still have it. And, it wasn't politically popular, and it was impossible. It was impossible politically to pass. So
right.
That's why I ended up doing what I did.
Maurice, your work with the National Registry of Exonerations makes you keenly aware, I know, of the more than 2,600 wrongful convictions that have been recorded in the U.S. Since 1989. Only Texas has more wrongful convictions on record than Illinois. We currently stand, I think, at 330 at this point. What does this number, 330 exonerations in the state of Illinois, say about the reliability of the justice system as a whole and the risk there is with the imposition of capital punishment?
Well, I think that any number that you're dealing with is a basement number, sadly. Mm-hmm. I like to say, well, I don't know if I like to say it, but I say that exonerations, the good news is we're exonerating people. The bad news is we still have people to exonerate. Yeah. And, you know, you mentioned more than 2,600 cases in the registry and 330 in Illinois. We really don't know how many there are. Mm-hmm. We know the ones we know about. We don't know how many people served their sentence and went on with their lives and are never going to be exonerated. I think what it shows, and one of the things that it's, we believe that this is a basement figure. And I think what it shows is, and what the registry, by accumulating this data, is that the system has been flawed. It continues to be flawed. And it is also, you know, I'm somewhat optimistic that by accumulating this information, it provides strength to people's arguments for change. And I do think that over the arc of time, going back to, say, 2000, when Governor Ryan declared the moratorium, we've seen improvements in how eyewitness identification procedures in terms of lineups and that sort of thing. As the governor mentioned, recording of interrogations. And it has been expanded to many other states. I do think that the forensic evidence has improved, although there's still junk science that you find. The biggest hurdle is that we have 3,000 counties in this country. And what we're really talking about here is the state system as opposed to the federal system. And each one of those counties has a district attorney. I mean, there might be a few that are consolidated in small counties, but there are their own little fiefdom. And so, and within those counties are multiple law enforcement agencies. There's the county sheriff, and then there's all the municipalities. And getting change to come in a uniform way is virtually impossible. And so what you hope is that over the passage of time that you get more and more people saying, well, this is what we have to do. This is the right thing to do. And, you know, face it, if you wind up getting socked with a huge judgment in a lawsuit, that can provide perhaps some impetus. You know, the city of Chicago is self-insured and has paid tens, hundreds of millions of dollars over the years. And, you know, it's a little bit disappointing to see that there isn't more taxpayer sort of outrage over this. But that is, I think, provided a motivation to evoke change.
Governor, in the epilogue of your book, you write about your conviction on federal charges that were related to your time as Secretary of State. And you acknowledge that your critics, some have theorized that your work on the death penalty issue was a way to detract from an impending federal investigation. But people around the world who supported the moratorium decision have seen it differently, and they consider that to be more appropriately what your legacy is that you left as you left office. How do you see it? What do you see as your legacy as the governor of Illinois?
Well, I think just the opposite of what the pundits had to say about my actions. It was an issue I was deeply concerned about, and especially because of my neighbor, Steve Small, was involved there. And not had anything to do with the wrongful conviction, but it was about the death penalty. And I had a lot of concern about that. But personally, I believe it didn't help me a bit as far as just conviction was going. I think it probably put a big target on my back. As Maurice said, every prosecutor, there's 102 counties in Illinois, and every one of them were absolutely opposed to what I did. And it didn't pull any punches about letting me know about it and how upset they were. And not only that, the federal government, George Bush was president at the time, He killed more people than 16 governors, I think. I don't know, 200 or 300 people during his tenure. And personally, I used to get asked a lot of questions about at the time he was running for president, and I was his campaign manager for Illinois. And they would say to me, well, what about George Bush? Well, I said, he's got a different system. And he always says that everybody that got convicted of the death for the death sentence was guilty because he had a good system and there wasn't any problems with it. Well, of course, that's a matter for discussion, I'm sure. But that wasn't the case in my situation. I knew we had a lot of problems with jailhouse snitches being responsible, black people getting convicted by all white juries, people that were in the prosecution part of it were doing things they shouldn't be doing, like the sergeant in Chicago that was using torture to get confessions from people that they thought were guilty or didn't even know whether they were or not, and didn't really care, frankly. So, no, I don't have any qualms about that, and I certainly didn't have any thoughts about having any impact other than it probably didn't help me any with the law enforcement groups.
Why do you think, Governor, that the discussion on capital punishment, it's still kind of a third rail for a lot of state legislators, even though it's showing across the country that more and more people are skeptical that their states should have a death penalty? Why do you think it's still such a touchy subject for them to address not only maybe a moratorium in their states while they look at things, but just this hesitancy and delay in putting reforms into place that could correct some of the mistakes that are made by some of these gatekeeper prosecutors across the country?
Well, they don't want to look, the legislators don't want to look like they're soft on crime. I don't know if you recall when Dawn Clark Netz ran against mm-hmm. Jim Edgar. She was absolutely opposed to the death penalty and made no bones about it. And Jim Edgar made that the issue of the campaign pretty much, that she was soft on crime and would be a terrible governor under those conditions, that she shouldn't be governor because she was so opposed to the death penalty. So, and he went on to beat her, as you know. He was mm-hmm. the governor and she got beat. That's one of the big reasons I couldn't get anything passed from my commission, was because people at that time, when there was an election, they didn't want to look soft on crime. Anything that was going to make the death penalty work better or whatever, the Republicans didn't want to make that happen. So I couldn't pass the bills.